Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Hawkeye fans. Chad Leistico of the Des Moines Register with Tyler Tashman of the Des Moines Register. Tyler, this was our first spring football together because you didn't start until the summer. So welcome and glad we're done with it. And it was basically like a two-week sprint to the finish thanks to the Iowa women. So what'd you think?
There's a lot going on. Well, it was cold outside, actually, because I was thinking back, like, at kids' day, it was, like, scorching hot, and it was pretty cold today. So, yeah.
You toughed it out in the stands. I was up
I was trying to get some video, and I was just getting it on my phone, so it wasn't the best quality. Someone was like, "It's like what, like watching Minecraft." So, I'm out here trying my best. So, I was gonna say we're gonna try to figure this out as we go. So, I mean, there was a lot going on, I guess. You want to start with somewhere on offense, probably.
Well, yeah, I mean,
should we start with Reese Dakin?
Yeah, the day did start with the punter. Okay. Actually, all right, let's start with that. Start with that just because – so people are probably still joining because I started like a minute or two early. So, yeah, Reese Dakin started the day with just some monster punts. It was it looked like Torrey Taylor other than he's smaller.
Yeah, and he's still pretty big though. Like he's still like fairly big. But because we were standing down on the field when he was out there and like those – he was just destroying some of them. And they were pretty like they were like within the 10 and 5 too, so
yeah.
And he's I mean like the thing is that he has never like played a college football game, you know, so
that is your official punting update from the spring practice. It was windy, so the punts with the wind looked better than against, and he'll get used to the punt rushes and all that stuff. But yeah, let's talk about the offense. One of the best parts I think about the spring game or whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's 11-on-11 for about an hour and a half. So it's pretty good. It's a pretty good sample. It's just, you get to see where the coaches see guys in the rotation, and we know where the quarterback situation stood, but I thought running back actually was a good place to start because that is a really strong position group for the Hawkeyes. We saw LeSean Williams in a boot, sounds like a sprained ankle. And all the injuries that we saw, by the way, which we'll probably get to as we go, sound like nothing too serious. So that's good. They got through spring without anything crazy major. But the running back room looks great. I mean, that's probably where I guess people probably maybe assume that in some ways. But Caleb Johnson, I feel like, based on talking to some people, like, he could be ready for kind of a re-breakout year because last year was a real disappointment for Caleb. And it just felt like with the way the Hawkeyes were so limited at quarterback that it just allowed defenses to just dial in on Caleb. And he was injured too, but you could see today, you could be reminded today when he got outside the tackles, he's a dangerous big man to stop.
I'll go through some of the guys that didn't participate due to injury. And like you said, it doesn't seem like any of these are like major. Logan Jones, Addison Estrenga, Jennings Dunker, Seth Anderson, LeSean Williams, Kyler Fisher, Jamari Harris, YA Black, and Cohen Entringer. That's not all inclusive, but those are some of the guys that it included. Cade McNamara, as of note, like, so he was in pads, throwing like on a limited basis. He didn't participate in any of the 7-on-7 or, you know, full go type stuff. He was doing like some limited drill work. So that's kind of where it stood on the injury front. I think another running back that popped was Kamari Moulton. And he was a guy that, in that Western Michigan game last season, he played well. He's a guy, you know, that I thought ran well. And when you mentioned Caleb too, it seems like there's more of a concerted effort for running backs to be catching the ball out of the backfield. There was a few times today where Caleb Johnson caught the ball outside of the tackles and was kind of able to turn up field. So getting the running backs, because that's something we really didn't see last season at all, was, you know, maybe outside of some screen plays, there just wasn't a lot of just running backs coming out of the backfield and catching balls. So that's, I think, another way just to get the ball in their hands, because that room is so good and you probably have a fair amount of your playmakers there, as just another way that Tim Lester can kind of be creative in getting guys the ball. And I will add too that we had heard about kind of the pre-snap movement as being something that was definitely in the offense. And after watching it today, that's obviously the case. There's a lot of kind of eye candy movement before the snap. There's one that comes to mind where it was Jarrett Bowie, wide receiver. He goes in motion to the far side, gets set, then comes back to the near side. And then they did like a pitch to Caleb Johnson to the far side. So it was just a lot of like kind of misdirection, keeping the defense on their toes, which, you know, is kind of a nice change of pace, because it seemed like so often with Brian Ferentz, like you could just kind of tell what was coming one after another, and depending on the formation.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Kamari Moulton. He saved his freshman year, so he only played in four games last year. And it seems like they like him. He was with the first team along with Caleb Johnson. Jazzy and Patterson ran with the second team along with Max White. So that's notable, especially because Terrell Washington got moved to receiver. So that also gives you an idea that they really like Kamari Moulton. And he's got some wiggle. Jazzy and Patterson looked good too, though. Like at first I was like, is he hurt or what? And no, he was fine and he looked fine, but they're just so deep at running back that, you know, Jazzy and Patterson, who was their leading rusher against Iowa State last year, is basically their fourth guy right now. So, and then they've got two freshmen running backs coming in. So, they're stacked right now in Liddell Betts's room, and maybe someone will transfer. I mean, I don't have any, you know, information that Jazzy Patterson is leaving, but that's like the type of guy that you would say, well, maybe he does try to move on, because it's just so deep right now. You know, especially once LeSean Williams returns. But I'm excited for the running backs, because of what we learned from the defensive guys, which is the run game has had more explosive plays this spring than it has in the last 5 years. And that's something from a defensive coach today. And that's pretty encouraging. And that all stems from, I was told, kind of the eye candy, the motion that you're talking about. There's confusion. Jay Higgins talked about how this was a confusing and stressful spring for the defense, because Lester was throwing a lot of motion, a lot of new stuff at it. And I'm sure they had Brian Ferentz's offense dialed in for 4 years. No, you know, obviously you would after 4 years of seeing it, but this was new for the defense. So we're not saying the offense is going to be dynamic. We're not saying it was dynamic today, but it's different, and it's clearly different. And then the last thing I'll add to that, just globally speaking, is Higgins said the offense really dialed it down today. He said it was super vanilla. Ferentz always does that in the spring practice. They're not going to show anything major, because they know this is a chance for, you know, other teams to scout them if they want. They could have anybody in the stands they want and scout the team. So pretty vanilla overall, but it sounds like over the course of the spring, it was a lot more complicated looking than today. So those are some big picture thoughts. And yes, by the way, this is a Shanahan offense. Lester's offense is textbook Kyle Shanahan. Matt LaFleur, of course, was one of his receivers back in the day, and obviously the head coach of the Green Bay Packers, and that's where he was last season. So I think that's exciting. You know, to bring that NFL style of offense here, and we're definitely going to see change. We may not see different results, but I think we will. But there's definitely change.
Generally speaking about the offense, like I thought, I mean, it wasn't like they were going crazy. Like I didn't like come out of it like, oh, wow, like this offense is like dynamic and really good, which I don't really think was expected. But They did like show some flashes, I think, of encouraging signs. I thought Caleb Brown looked really good at wide receiver. And then in the quarterback kind of, which is, you know, quarterback race, which is kind of the biggest, you know, one of the bigger storylines. Deacon and Marco both, I'd say, played, you know, flawed. They had flawed days. There were some mistakes made. I thought out of the two of them that Marco had the better day. He kind of flashed his ability to use his legs. He had a really nice throw to Caleb Brown. And then also with that ability to use his legs, he kind of had like a bootleg fake handoff that he took in for a touchdown that they were right around the goal line. And I was just interested to see him because like we just have not seen a lot of him in game action, you know, since he got to Iowa, because he got thrown in late against Tennessee and we saw a little bit of his ability to use his legs. But I don't think what the quarterback showed today is not like, I wouldn't say, oh, it alleviates any worry at all about, like, I still feel like the quarterback room is, there's still a lot of instability there and there's still things that need to be figured out if I was going to be better at that position. But I do think that Marco showed a little bit of what he's capable of and maybe what his ceiling can be as a dual threat type guy. So it was nice to just kind of see him be out there on the field and like see kind of what he's able to do right in front of our eyes.
Yeah. To me, you could see why Deacon Hill was the number one quarterback this spring, because he knew how to go through his progressions quickly, get the ball out of his hands quickly, which is what you need when you're trying to learn a new offense. You can't have a guy just camping out in the pocket and scrambling. That doesn't do any good for the other guys in there and to get the timing down. So Lines does give you that extra element, clearly has more upside. I thought they were pretty equal in terms of throwing ability, but obviously Marco's legs push him over the top. He was going against lesser defensive players too, so you got to put that in there. But this was all basically a race for the number three quarterback spot because Cade McNamara is going to be number one. Whoever they get in the transfer portal, presumably number two, and they will be trying to get somebody who can compete with Cade McNamara as well. They are still saying Cade is on track for June full go. There's no reason to push him. You could tell in the warmups today that his ball is just so much better and so much different than the other two guys. It's crisp. I mean, this is just like minor drills, but it's just, there's a difference. And like, there was one throw, I'd have to go through my notes. I don't have them right here, but where it was like Deacon threw the ball a little bit behind a guy, you know, in the middle of a zone and, you know, guy had to reach back to try to catch it and he dropped it. I can't remember who it was now, but I was like, I told Scott, who was next to me in the press box, I was like, you know, that's a throw that Cade McNamara puts on target typically, not saying every time, but like that throws on target and that's an 18-yard gain. And it's just because, you know, you have to have that timing and that accuracy. So we didn't see Cade McNamara light it up last year, but also he wasn't 100% last year. So, again, don't get bent out of shape about Deacon versus Marco being like, oh, my God, one of these guys has to play. They're racing for number three right now. We just don't know who number two is going to be yet. Something could fall through and one of these guys has to be number two, but you still have to they're going to go after – they know they need to get a quarterback, all right? They know they have to. And the nice thing is for whoever they can recruit here, because the portal's going to start getting busy now the next week, because there's about 8 days left, no, 10 days left in the period, but a lot of spring practices are ending today, you know, and people are having their meetings in the next couple of days. So, the portal's going to start filling up. Iowa's probably got some names in mind that it knows are going to enter, and they'll go after that person. The swarm's ready to do it. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. We'll have to just be patient, see what happens there. But they clearly need someone else right now. I think that's obvious.
I had a similar thought in my mind when I was watching Kate throws. Like, this is what a starter in the Big Ten is supposed to look like, just the way, like the kind of precision, the speed to his ball. So I felt the same way. I think maybe where some of the concern comes in more with the quarterbacks and the fact that it feels urgent, I guess is the word that I would use, is that going into last season, who would have thought it would have been Deacon Hill or like Marco Linez in there? So I think that's why there feels like there's a lot more pressure on this maybe than there is in reality, because last season was such a hard lesson of like your backup option has to be competent and the backup to your backup option has to be competent. And Iowa learned that the hard way last season because that obviously wasn't the case. And I think that's where you feel like, well, if Iowa doesn't get a quarterback in the portal and that falls through, and then you're relying on Cade McNamara to stay healthy, and can he stay healthy for an entire season? So that's why I think, you know, this kind of how Marco and Deacon are handling themselves right now in their development, it just feels like there's so much more kind of pressure on it, because you know that they can easily be thrown into that one spot based on what happened last season, and it needs to get better than last season. So as much as I think, you know, the hope, like you said, would be is that that's the race for number three, like in an ideal world. But, you know, if you look back at last season, that would, the ideal world was not even close to, you know, happening. So I think it's almost like you kind of hope that your lower tier options are going to be good enough because they weren't last season.
So another thing that happened last year was that Joe Labus was banged up and didn't develop, and Iowa did not have a real quarterbacks coach on its full-time staff last year. So they do now. Tim Lester, you know, working to develop these guys. And so I think that's probably who you thought would be the number two last year behind Cade, and that just didn't pan out. Joe was hurt a lot, didn't progress how they wanted to see him, and, you know, ended up being shuffled back behind Marco to like number four, essentially. So, again, you didn't see development. You just didn't see any kind of ascent from the quarterback position in place. You hope you have that now with Tim Lester, who I've been really impressed with. We got to talk to him Thursday. We haven't podcasted since he talked Thursday, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, what, before we keep going into other positions, because the quarterback is so important right now, what did you think, anything you took away from what Lester said Thursday about everything, the offense, et cetera, that, I don't know, was interesting, helps advance, you know, what we're talking about here?
It feels like he's like pushing, and this seems like it would naturally be the case when you're picking up a new offense, but that he's just like pushing guys out of their comfort zones. Like he is putting them in situations for them to fail now in hopes that down the road, that's going to lead to growth. And I mean, I think that's a smart thing to do. That's probably just good coaching, but he just seems like the way he talks, and obviously on-field results are the biggest thing, but the way he talks, he just seems like he has a good grip on, you know, just a good knowledge of the game, of what needs to be done to have a good offense, of how to push guys, of how, you know, his personality. He just seems like he has kind of a good handle on all that. And before the kind of open practice got fully underway today, like we visited him with him a little bit, and like he's just like a, I don't know, he's just like kind of like a fun personality, it seems like, pretty chill, like an open book, like just good energy is the way I would describe it. Like he has good energy to him, seems upbeat. So as far as we can judge to this point without even playing a game, like he seems like he's adjusting and fitting in really well, at least from where I see it.
Yeah. And it seems like, I agree. Yeah. Like the energy is infectious, and it seems like it's fun to play for him so far. And so I've been more than impressed with what he has brought to the table. Kirk was asked about John Budmeyer today by Scott. Sounds like everything we've heard, that they're working kind of in concert. And so I think that's a positive overall. And I think the thing that I think people are worried about is like nothing's going to change. And based on like what Kirk Ferentz, like the read I have, each time we talk to Kirk Ferentz about what's happening with the offense, like all the, you know, how, what do you, it's like, he's like staying out of it. Like he's like, he almost seems confused by the, I don't mean this as a criticism of Kirk, but like, he almost seems like the, you know, he's not really, he's like, well, the, you know, like the language, he always starts with like the language is like so difficult, you know, like it's almost like, I'm sure this isn't the case, but he almost gives off the impression like, I don't know what's going on, you know, like I don't even know what they're talking about. So it's like, there's no way you can meddle in the offense if you have no idea what's going on. Now, I know that's not totally the case, but like Deacon even said, he's like, Kirk just hangs out with the offensive line. Like this is Lester's show. So, you know, all the language, the verbiage, this is all like Lester's deal, Lester and now Budmeier. So, and Hodge and you know, Betts as well, obviously on the offensive side and Barnett. But it seems like it's just created a lot of energy. And also, you know, talked to Logan Jones today for a little while. And I know you talked to Richmond, right? And it just seemed like there was energy from those guys too, like about just the offense, the vibe of the offense. Logan Jones, you know, said the offensive line has improved a ton. Kirk Ferentz today said the offensive line is much more physical than it's been in the last couple of years. That's a good thing.
Well, like you said, it's like, it's really, we can't tell how hands on or off Kirk is exactly with the offense, but I think that was a big question coming into this offensive coordinator change is like, is he going to give them Tim Lester, the jurisdiction, the flexibility to like make this be his offense and not, you know, Kirk Ferentz's offense.
That's what I was saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's clearly Kirk does not have his hands right in the offense.
And so I think that as much as we can tell is encouraging that he is kind of giving Tim Lester the ability to stretch his wings and make this his own. And another thing I just thought of that kind of speaks to the way that the impression that Tim Lester, his personality kind of gives off is like when the quarterbacks were throwing today, like he was like pretending to be a running back when they were like faking the handoff. So like, is you have your offensive coordinator like pretending to be the running back and like kind of helping out with the drill, like being really hands-on. So, and I think the same kind of impression showed when Iowa put out the, like they mic'd him up for a practice and put out a clip of it. So it just seems like he's just kind of open and, you know, he's been a head coach before. So he knows and, you know, how to deal with media and just kind of how, you know, how all that is combined with, you know, the on-field stuff.
Yeah, I hope that they let him talk more than Brian talked. I mean, we got Brian zero times last year, right? Did we get him like?
Well, it was just
at the bowl game.
But yeah,
we didn't get him between media day and the bowl game after he was fired. Like it was like, or whatever, let go. It would be great to hear from Tim Lester more often. Maybe we will now that, you know, Seth Wallace is assistant head coach. It seems like they're giving more and more power to the assistant coaches. So, I don't know. I hope we do because he's insightful. I think he helps the fans understand what's going on. And I think he's, you know, he's a breath of fresh air. And I think that's what this offense needs. And I think you want him out there, especially if you're trying to attract offensive talent. Like, hey, we're doing different stuff here. It's not like we're retreading the same old offense out there again, trotting the same offense out there again. So you mentioned receivers. Seth Anderson was out. Sounded like the little bit he was in this spring. Kirk said he looked really good. But the main three receivers, it looks like, are Caleb Brown, Caden Weechen, who was, I think, the star of the spring is what I was told, and Jarrett Bowie. So, and I thought Dayton Howard looked good too. So, I mean, obviously the receiver room needs help. They have freshmen coming in, and then Terrell Washington, kind of exciting with the ball in his hands, finished the practice with like a 60-yard touchdown run.
Yeah, I'll make a quick pivot to defense. Carson Shire had a really good day, picked off Deacon Hill. He also at least one comes to my mind of a tackle for loss. So the linebackers room is just really talented, really deep. And then in terms of the other cornerback spot, because obviously with Cooper leaving and this next week, he could possibly be, you know, Iowa's next first round pick in the NFL draft. But you think Jamari Harris is going to be starting at one of the spots? He's been out, so he didn't participate during the open practice on Saturday. But it sounds like maybe there's kind of three guys vying for that other spot. It seems like it's a pretty open competition between Deshaun Lee, TJ Hall, and John Nestor. Those three sound like they're kind of the ones that are in the mix. I think maybe there was a presumption that it might be Deshaun's Lee's to lose, and maybe that is the case, but because of, you know, he did start a handful of games last season. But it seems, I mean, people have talked really highly of Nestor. It seems like TJ Hall, based on what we've heard, is coming along well. And then you also have Devin Hilson kind of there as well. So it seems like there's really good and kind of healthy competition for, you know, that other cornerback spot.
Yeah, based on what I saw today, I think it's going to be Nestor. It just seems like they really like him. And he was also the gunner on punts. Just kind of seemed like the Cooper DeJean role. You know, he's gotten the Riley Moss comparisons. Now let's give him a Cooper DeJean comparison. Why not? It looked like to me most of the day it was Nestor and TJ Hall with the ones and Deshaun Lee with the twos along with Devin Hilson. So we'll see. Jamari was out, like you said. And, you know, Jamari has not been totally durable over the course of his career. So, you know, you're going to probably need all those guys or most of those guys at some point. So it's good that they're building depth there. Zach Lutmer was kind of one of the spring stars that Phil mentioned at safety. So they're just loaded at safety right now, especially once Entringer gets back. D-line rotation was I feel good about the defensive ends at this point. Ethan Herkett, Deontay Craig. I think people forget how good Deontay Craig was. He was hurt last year. He was playing hurt last year. Those two guys, I think they'll be fine starting. And then Max Llewellyn, Phil Parker was talking up. Sounds like he's still up and down in practice, but seems like a, you know, trending up. And then Brian Allen, you know, would be their fourth defensive end right now. And we like what we've seen from him in the glimpses that we have seen. So D tackle, probably they're a little thinner, but once YA Black is back, I mean, I think he's going to be like playing a bunch of snaps along with Aaron Graves. I don't think they're going to rotate too much in the middle. Probably Jeremiah Pittman and those two, and that might be about it.
Yeah, I was going to say YA was out Saturday, and Estranga was, I mentioned him before, Estranga was too. Lachey didn't do a ton on Saturday. He kind of had a quieter day, but
he looked like himself to me.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. Like when he was running, he looked good. Mm-hmm. Cutting. Yeah. So that's encouraging.
Yeah.
Anything else? Is that
no.
End of podcast.
I can't even remember what I was talking about.
Well, it's always fun. I mean, the spring, you know, you don't suffer any losses. So you get to hear about, you know, they're not going to talk about guys, oh, this guy looks terrible. This guy looks terrible. That's just not how it is right now. When we get to the games, then we'll have more stuff to like criticize or whatever. But for now, you're looking for up and coming stories. And I think the biggest story now going into, besides quarterback transfer portal, is like there's still four over the scholarship number right now. So who will kind of peel off? And it would be kind of irresponsible probably to like start naming names of guys. Oh, they need to ditch this guy. But there are some guys that just have not made it through the depth chart that you would think would be encouraged to move on or maybe feel like they want to move on if they want to play college football. But if they want to stay on the team that they really like, then they might not leave. And they're getting whatever, $10,000 in NIL every year or whatever they're getting. Like, still a pretty good deal because you can't get that like by going to an FCS school. So that's interesting. Iowa just does not lose a lot of guys, but they kind of need to lose about five or six, you know. And if you could pick for the five or six, like if you were a general manager, you'd cut them, but that's not how it works in college. So that'll be something to follow here in the coming 10 days. Who enters the portal?
I thought it was the offensive line. So Dunker, Jones were out. The thing is like, I feel like it's really hard to judge the offensive line in like a day like this, because you're not allowed to hit the quarterback. So, you know, guys pull up if they get kind of near them. So it's hard to tell like pass protection, like how good it actually is. I thought the O-line looked pretty good. Like I said, it's hard to exactly kind of gauge it, but I think that's quietly one of the really big storylines on the offense. Maybe so you have quarterback, wide receivers, but I think offensive line is right there behind them. Of they just haven't kind of been able to play that physical brand that you need if Iowa wants to be the type of offensive team, you know, that it can be. And they made an improvement from 2022 to 2023. It's not to the point where you're like feel great about it, but there was improvement. I think if you can take another step and keep building, then you get a lot closer to where you're going to be, or where you want to be. But that's going to open up a lot of different things. And especially when you talk about like, can Cade McNamara stay healthy? Like the offensive line are obviously the one that's going to hold the keys to that. So, you know, interested to see kind of, and I know last season they were talked up as well, before last season, I should say. So it's like, that's one of the things I feel like the O-line is like, you have to see it on the field before you can really make a judgment, because it can be talked highly of as much as you want, but it's like, you can't truly see how it is until they get on the field against another opponent.
Yeah. And I think that's where the Tim Lester offense, hopefully in an ideal world, if you're a Hawkeye fan, using those motions, he talked about this on Thursday, it kind of helps back off the linebackers. Like, it felt like the offensive line last year just didn't have a chance so often, because it's just like the box is so crowded because Iowa can't throw the ball. And like, what are they supposed to do? Like 5-on-7 or 6-on-8 or whatever. Like, it's tough to win those battles. You got to be perfect and then have your running back miss two guys. So, you know, it's hopefully they can back off some. You know, if the offense can have some success, they can, you know, create some lighter boxes and help the offensive line win more often. Because you're right, if the offensive line sucks, then none of this is going to work. They have to be better on the O-line. And I doubt they're going to bring anyone in the portal there, because, you know, after losing Caden Proctor, you know, who else are you going to bring in that's going to have, I don't know, I'd be surprised if they already have 19 offensive linemen on scholarship or something like that. So, like, they can't really like take on more alignment at this point. They probably need to lose a couple, to be honest. So,
and I mean, they have so much continuity. Like, there's so many guys returning. Really, the only like major contributor from last season that's gone is Rusty Feth. And yeah, beyond that, there's a lot of guys with another year of experience, a lot of guys that have been playing together for a while. So like, it feels like this is the type of season that you have to play well. You have to be as close to dominant as can be.
Yeah, and Logan Jones said he had a shoulder surgery. I don't know if I mentioned that. So he's going to be back in May, something that's been bothering him for a couple of years. So, yeah, they should be pretty healthy. And Mason Richmond wasn't healthy last year either at all. He was playing really hurt last year. And so a healthier O-line, too, should help quite a bit. All right. We said we'd do about a half hour and we've already gone 33, Tyler. So give me your final thoughts. Could you beat Spencer Lee? Do you think you could how long could you last against Spencer Lee, who is going to the Olympics as long as he finishes top three in Turkey? He beat Thomas Gilman today.
I think he could pin me in it like three times in about 1 second. So,
okay. But you're like a stud athlete. You're younger than Spencer Lee.
No, I'm gonna take my major loss on that one.
All right. Well, anyway, just wanted to point out Spencer Lee. Yeah. Huge day for him. If you haven't checked that out, do a little Google search. Great day for Spencer Lee. Happy for him. So, anyway, Tyler Tashman, Chad Lystico, closing out spring football. Now we got the NFL draft coming up. We saw Cooper DeJean and Logan Lee on the sidelines today. Cooper will be a first round pick. I'm almost certain of it on Thursday. So that'll be fun. I guess stay tuned for that coverage. And I don't know. We got a few more stories coming, right? Off the spring game still. Yeah. And my observations are up. You got a story on Marco Linus. So We're not quite done yet, but this is basically, this podcast is on the way to ending spring football. So there you go.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tyler. Great close. Way to go.
Thank you.
All right. All right. Talk to you guys later.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.